This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Summon your anticipation for an all-new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. This season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix May 16th. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop starting May 2nd.
Welcome to Katie's Crib, a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Have you and Scott, I mean, they're so young, but like, have you guys talked to them at all about Huntington's disease? Do they know what it is?
I was just telling Scott we needed to talk to our nursery school about how we're going to approach it kind of going forward, because Scott and I are very open that I have Huntington's and McCoy's getting older and he does not know that I have it. He knows Gammy has it, what he calls my mom, but he doesn't know I have it.
It's so wonderful. And I feel like everyone should use their teachers more because I think if you have a teacher you love, getting their advice of how to approach kids with some big, hard topics is always another avenue of where to get advice from. I'm sure they will be very helpful.
You know, I feel like that what you're saying goes back to just allowing your community to help you, right? Like reaching out and finding somebody in your community to help you navigate a tough subject is good.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Katie's Crib. Today's episode fills my heart, and I personally just love our guest so much. Her name is Kelsey Porter. Her and I have kids at the same preschool, and I've known her for years. We have so many mutual friends, a lot of whom have been on Katie's Crib before. She is the wife of actor Scott Porter, who you guys might know is his portrayal of Jason Street in the NBC television drama Friday Night Lights, which is my favorite pilot ever. Kelsey previously worked as a casting director and a producer for a ton of shows, including like The Biggest Loser and ABC's The Taste. Kelsey currently serves as a member of the National Board of Trustees at Huntington's Disease Society of America, and she raises money for the organization annually. She herself was diagnosed with Huntington's disease and has an absolutely fascinating story of how she became a mom, knowing that she has a disease that could be passed on genetically. It's just a very interesting, amazing topic that I've wanted to get into for a while. She and her husband, Scott, have two children. Their son, McCoy, is 6. Their daughter, Clover, is 4. And I am so proud of this episode, and I'm so honored. Hi, Kelsey. Welcome to Katie's Crib. Kelsey and I go to the same preschool, and that is how we first met, right?
Yes. Yeah, it is. Right before you started, because Rebecca introduced us.
Was Rebecca Beninati your doula too?
Oh, of course. Rebecca was my doula and my mommy and me teacher through all of my pregnancies with both kids.
Oh my God. Okay, so first tell the listeners, okay, you have two kids with amazing names. Tell me.
I have two kids, my son McCoy, who is 6, and my daughter Clover is 4.
It's crazy how many people we have in common. You guys who are listening and who have been on the podcast, Rebecca Beninati obviously was both of our doulas. Anjali Cabral is a mutual friend. Mary O'Malley is a mutual friend. Talia Moore, who we've had on for both postpartum depression anxiety talk, but also for amazing nutrition. You and Scott met
This is just my loving anecdote. But like, you guys met Friday Night Lights. Scott Porter, as you know, was one of the leads of Friday Night Lights, which is literally my favorite pilot that I've ever seen.
So good.
And he played Jason Street. And you met because he shot it in Texas and you're a little cheerleader in Texas. Were you like, I mean, you weren't 5 years old. You were over 18. But like, tell me the...
I was 22 when Scott and I met.
But that's so young and cute.
I know.
I cannot.
We met in Austin. He was there for Friday Night Lights and I was going to college. And we met playing beer pong against each other at a Halloween party.
It is perfect. It writes itself.
Yeah.
Was it love at first sight?
It was love at first sight. Yep. It was like instantaneous.
I bet. And was it like so serious quickly?
Yep. I moved in with him 2 weeks after knowing him. And funny story, I moved me and my bunny, because I had a bunny, like a live bunny named IHOP. I moved myself and my bunny.
Genius. Okay. In with Scott Porter.
In with Scott Porter. And guess what? He had a roommate at the time, Zach Guilford.
Oh,
but Zach was traveling and out of town a lot. And so Scott and I would like basically stay in Scott's room. And then Zach would come back and Zach's like, who is this? You have a new girlfriend? I mean, it is
And
hilarious.
IHOP is living in my room.
And you got a bunny? Yeah.
Oh my God. Wow. Well, you guys are such a wonderful couple. You guys are such a great parenting couple. And just, I just see how you guys work. We've been lucky enough that you guys have come over a few times for hangs. And I just feel like you guys are great parents. You're both so involved and you both work. You just have it all going on. You guys are really supportive of each other. And God, I just feel like you guys have really been through something that, you know, even my, you know, my husband and I have been together 16 years and we've never gone through anything like this, like anything even remotely as serious.
I think we got like thrown into the deep end after the Huntingtons. I think of our relationship as like before Huntington's and after Huntington's.
Wow.
Just because of the effect it has had on our relationship. But it honestly, it's tightened our bond. So it's like a zipper. Like we were just inseparable after that. And we've depended on each other through so much that it has strengthened our relationship quite a bit.
I've wanted you to come on forever because I think you're just such an amazing mom. But also you have such a wild story. Tell us about Huntington's disease, what it is, how you found out you had it, and how that affected your wanting to have babies.
Yeah. Okay. So for anybody that doesn't know, Huntington's disease is a genetic disorder and it causes the breakdown of nerve cells in the brain. So it deteriorates your physical and mental abilities at the same time. So people describe it. The easy way to say it is it's ALS and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's simultaneously.
Come the fuck on.
Yeah, it's a really fucked up disease.
And like, how did you, and we can curse as much, how did you find out?
I was wondering.
That,
I was like,
oh yeah, I curse all the time. I'm a mess. But how did you find out that you had this?
Right. So the year after Scott and I got married, we were at Christmas with my family in San Antonio, Texas. My mom set us down and she had been seeing some doctors because she felt like she had some numbness and she couldn't really understand what was going on. The neurologist diagnosed her with Huntington's disease.
Wow.
And she went and she got tested without telling any of us and she had it.
How do they test for it? Is it like they draw blood or how do you know?
Yes, it's a blood draw and a cheek swab. I'm trying to remember. But it's the kind of good thing is that we know where it comes from. So with Alzheimer's, we don't really understand where it comes from. But with Huntington's, it's a specific gene and it's a defective gene. So it releases this protein that basically attacks everything in your body. There's a test for it. You can go get tested to see if you have this gene. And any child of a parent that has HD, which is what it's called, has a 50% chance of having it.
Holy shit balls.
And not like, oh, you might develop this thing later in life. Or no, you are going to develop it. And it just, you don't know when.
Was it a big question for you whether or not to find out you were carrying the gene?
No.
You were like, I'm 100% finding out.
100% was finding out. like when we first found out, my biggest concern was my mom dealing with this progressive, you know, degenerative disease. And it was earth shattering for, you know, our family.
Earth shattering. Is there varying grades of how severe and also how quickly it comes on?
Yeah. So yes, to all of those, but there's no way of knowing. So some people get it earlier in their life. Some people get it later in their life. There is such a thing as juvenile Huntington's. About 10% of people that have HD have juvenile Huntington's, which is even more devastating because now you're talking about it in children. But the cognitive and the physical, it's called chorea, where your body has tics and movement. It's awful. It's an awful disease. There's not a cure. And that's why, you know, Scott and I are super involved with the organizations now.
Yeah, you guys are super involved with it. And what is the organization called?
We are involved with HDSA, and it's the Huntington's Disease Society of America. And I'm actually on the board of directors now.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. And we always participate very heavily in Freeze HD, which is the gala that we do every year.
Freeze HD, that's usually in the fall.
Yes.
And then throughout the year, if you want to get involved, find out more information, it's HDSA, which is Huntington's Disease Society of America.
Mm-hmm.
When you got the earth-shattering news that you're dealing with, A, your mom, who has a very awful disease that will change her life, now you're looking at it for your own life, and you find out the news that you, too, carry the gene. How did you start to come around to the idea of, I want to be a mom, I'm going to figure this out, what are my options? Because I think this is science at its best. This is unbelievable.
For sure. It is. It's science is the only way that we had kids HD free. Like, it's the only way.
Wow.
The second that we left Christmas with my parents after finding out my mom had HD, I looked at Scott and I said, I've got to go get tested. I want to be a mom for as long as I can. We've got to get tested so that we can have kids. That became my drive and the focus. And because of that, I think I was able to deal with everything that came along with it a little easier because I had a focus. I had a purpose. I was going to go get tested. And then if I didn't have it, whatever, we would have kids in the good old fashioned fun way.
Sure.
And if I had it, we could then focus on how to make it happen that way.
And it's called PGDIVF, right? Which stands for, guys, here we go. Preimplantation Genetic Diagnosis In Vitro Fertilization.
Yes, you get a gold star.
Oh, it's written down in my notes. So basically, you have an egg retrieval process. They shoot you up with hormones like you would IVF. You get put out for a short minute, 20 minutes or whatever. They take out the eggs when they say it's go time. And then they test each embryo.
They test the embryo. So they have to make the embryo because what happens is Scott also has that gene, but his gene is good. My gene is the faulty gene. So they have to make the embryo and then they have to test to see what embryos inherited my faulty gene. And what embryos got Scott's good gene?
Oh my God. This is so crazy.
In order to do this, they explained it to us as they had to make a probe to stick into the embryos and they needed the DNA of me, of Scott, of my mom, and my dad so that they could figure out what genes
was the faulty one.
Yep.
Guys, are you listening to this? Like, what the fucking hell? This is unbelievable to me. And then how do you pick, choose? What were the conversations you and Scott were having at this time?
So then we got 12 embryos and 7 had Huntington's and 5 were clear. So those 7 that had Huntington's, we actually donated back to science for research.
Wow.
Because we were not going to use them. And science had already given us a lot. So we did that. And then we were left with 5. Think of it this way. It's a coin flip, right? So everyone is a coin flip. So it just, you don't know. The odds are not, they're 50-50 per embryo. So it could have swung all in that direction.
Wow.
But I was young and I didn't have fertility problems. That's why I always, because we had a lot of embryos, right? We had 12 embryos.
Yeah. I mean, I've just been through egg freezing with like four of my friends this past year. 2020 and the lack of dating has put a real wake up call on a lot of my friends who don't have a significant others and they're over 40. And let me tell you, 12 is a very good number. Like that is high as fuck.
Yeah. No, I had, they retrieved 30. I had 33 follicles.
Oh my God.
I'm trying to remember how old I was. I was 27. I was like in my 20s. So there, I was like ripe.
So the implantation process, did it take right away the first embryo that was chosen? Did you pick, I don't know if you want to talk, did you pick a boy on purpose? Did you just pick, like, how do you do that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is. We just told our doctor, like, you choose one that you think is healthiest and put it in me and we'll see what happens. And so she did and it took. And then it was a little boy and we were over the moon.
How was your pregnancy? Does Huntington's show up at all when there's this many hormones and changes and fluctuations in your body, or is it completely dormant and doesn't matter?
No, yeah. The Huntington's basically is just building up, the protein builds up inside your body until you finally see symptoms. So, but it doesn't affect until it's built up enough.
Got it.
So it didn't affect my pregnancies. My pregnancies weren't, I had cholestasis with McCoy. Do you even know what that is?
What's
Have
that?
Have you ever heard of this?
No, what's that?
Well, are you ready for this? It's a rare disease.
Oh, Jesus. What is it? What is it?
Which I seem to hit the lottery on. It's basically where your liver stops processing the bile in your body. And so at 37 weeks, I went in for my checkup and my OB was like, is there any symptoms that have been happening? You're feeling fine. I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And Scott's like, she's been really itchy on her hands and her feet, like crazy itchy. Like I would make him scratch my feet. He'd wake me up at night. And I was like, babe, that's not anything. And my OB said, well, just let's run this test. It's real rare, but we'll run it. And they ran it. And sure enough, I had what's called cholestasis. And one of the symptoms is having insanely itchy hands and feet.
I know one other person, Casey Wilson. Do you know this actress, Casey Wilson?
No.
I've been a guest on Katie's Crib, but she is on Happy Endings. She's
on
Shrink Next Door. She had cholestasis
and
her calves and lower legs were itching like a fucking motherfucker.
Yes.
They rushed her in. They induced her. But like, so your liver just stops functioning?
Yeah, it just stops. Like the bile builds up in your body, basically. It's bizarre.
Good
so
Lord.
They did the same thing, rushed me in, Pitocin, forced it out. 44 hours of labor and it ended in a C-section.
No, what?
Yes. So.
And you're like the most, so for you guys listening, you can't see her, but she's like literally the physically strongest woman I know. I'm not kidding. Like how many, you can run like a lot of miles and you are like very physically fit. Okay, I want you to picture like a hardcore cheerleader. Like you run, you do Pilates, like you work out. So like the fact that you ended up in a C-section, like, was it just stopping? Like, did you get the epidural and the Pitocin and your body was not responding or the baby was in stress?
I got the Pitocin, no epidural. And then 24 hours in, ended up with the epidural. And then, he was just stuck.
So you weren't dilating anymore and
nope.
He just, and you were like,
I mean, they were forcing me, right? So they did the Foley balloon.
Oh yeah. I had that.
Is all of it. I have the most embarrassing story about the Foley balloon.
What?
I feel like I shouldn't say it.
Okay, then don't. But if you want to, you can. But there is absolutely no pressure here. I had a Foley balloon too, which by the way, then I went to work on Scandal and I said to Scott Foley, is this from your fucking family? Like, what is this medieval torture device that's in the shape of a balloon that's like put inside my vagina and slowly over time the balloon is blown up?
Yeah.
I'll
tell you the story.
Tell me.
So when I went in, they gave me like the pill on your cervix to soften it and start opening. And then they inserted the Foley balloon. And I had been there a while and I being a woman who had not gone through birth before, I was terrified of pooping.
Of course. Right? Of course.
I did not want to poop while giving birth. Now I could give two shits. But back then, I was terrified of it. So I had the Foley balloon in and I was like, oh my God, I think I have to poop. This is great. I'll poop before I give birth and then I won't poop while giving birth.
Great idea.
I like take my little IV bag of Pitocin and the Foley balloon. And I'm like, babe, help me get to the bathroom. Scott takes me to the bathroom and I sit down and I'm like, this is great. I poop and the fucking Foley balloon comes out
into the poop.
Foley
balloon.
I am freaking out because one, nobody told me it was supposed to come out.
Oh my God.
I'd done something wrong. So I'm like, Scott. And he comes rushing in and I'm like, I pooped and the thing came out. And he's like, okay. And God bless him.
He gets
on his knees and he's looking between my legs.
He's like,
I think if I hold the balloon and we flush the toilet, the poop will go down, but the balloon will stay.
God.
We're devising this plan together to try and get out of this situation I've gotten us in. And the nurse walks around the corner and she's like, honey, what are you doing?
Oh my God.
Like, get up off the floor. This is my job. This is no big deal.
Oh my God. Yes. And everybody fucking poops. Also, the Foley balloon, what it meant was that you were probably 4 centimeters dilated and the Foley balloon came out when it was supposed to.
Yes, exactly. But we did not know that. And I love my husband so much because he did not care. He was going to get me out of the situation.
That's how you know he's the real deal.
That was the only poop I had prior. And then with Clover, I had already had a C-section.
Right.
And I had already done 44 hours of labor and I just didn't feel like doing it again. So I just scheduled a C-section with her.
Perfect. And did you always know you wanted two?
Yes. We always wanted two. At one point, Scott wanted three. And then we had one. And he's like, two's good.
Yeah. Great. And how did you pick? Did you want a girl? Did you do the same thing to your doctor, like pick the healthiest one? Or you were like, I want a girl?
Yeah. We looked at it as our silver lining. We're just going to choose the girl.
Yes.
After all this crap.
I would have. Are you kidding? Yeah. Yes. After all the like shit. I would like to be a mother of a girl also, you know? Yeah. Yes, please. Thanks so much.
Yep. That's what we did. We love to say that my daughter is like very old for her age. She's very mature.
She is.
She's always been that way. Like she's just very mature. And we always say, well, she sat on ice for 2 years. So she must have this old soul. Cause her and McCoy were the same group.
Oh, yeah, they're kind of the same age.
I mean,
it's so weird. That's so weird. They're the same embryonic age. Is that a thing?
I don't know. But it's like, you know, if it would have been normal, they would have been fraternal twins.
Wow, this is so
not weird?
Cool. It's so cool. Have you and Scott, I mean, they're so young, but like, have you guys talked to them at all about Huntington's disease? Do they know what it is? How do those conversations happen? Do we have a plan for that?
That's funny you should say that because I was just telling Scott we needed to talk to our nursery school about how we're going to approach it kind of going forward because Scott and I are very open that I have Huntington's and McCoy's getting older and he does not know that I have it. He knows that my mom has it and we've talked to him about what it does because she does have symptoms and we want him to be empathetic.
Yes.
More than anything. So he knows Gammy has it, what he calls my mom.
Cute.
But he doesn't know I have it. And Clover doesn't either. So
they're so little.
But they know so much.
It's so wonderful. And I feel like everyone should use their teachers more because I think if you have a teacher, you love getting their advice of how to approach kids with some big, big, hard topics is always another avenue of where to get advice from. I'm sure they will be very helpful.
You know, I feel like that what you're saying goes back to just allowing your community to help you, right? Like reaching out and finding somebody in your community to help you navigate a tough subject is good. That's what we should be doing that with people in our community.
For sure. You take such a better left turn at boundaries and limits than I do. You are so good at setting loving boundaries, which I've had to learn as a parent that that is a form of love. Like, I was such a goody two-shoe as a kid. I didn't need limits set. I was such a rule follower. And my son is really not. And it took me so long to understand that setting boundaries and limits is like a loving thing to do. It's not like a bad thing to do.
Yeah.
No. But I suck at it. Suck.
Well, it's
and you're
not
amazing
easy.
At it. No, you're great. Like, how are you so good at it?
But it's not. I might be good at it. But one, I've had more practice than you. My son is 6 years old and he's pushing the boundaries like crazy right now. But I am a huge, huge believer in boundaries because I feel like it's the only way where I actually get them to listen to me. And it sucks. And it sucks to say 50 times, I will not let you do that. I cannot let you do that, McCoy. I cannot let you do that, but I won't give in. And when that boundary is set, yeah, they know they're safe and they're secure in there. And they just feel better in life. I feel like they feel better in their emotions, in their feelings. You can have the big cry. I am okay with you expressing your emotions. I'll hold you while you do it, but we're not going to do the thing you want to do.
Can you give an example right now of like a boundary? Like, tell me what I'm looking down the pipe as a six-year-old. I'm so fucked.
He's just very, what's the word I'm looking for? It starts with a D. He's just very defiant right now.
Oh,
he's
fuck.
Very, and not defiant. He's a very good kid. He's great in school, but defiant in, I'm like, okay, it's bedtime. And now we've regressed back to like, no, I don't want to go to bed. Whereas like we'd moved past that. It's been years since he did that. But it seems like the defiancy
coming
has,
up again.
Yep.
So I'm in defiancy too. I don't know, but my four-year, I mean, Albie is unbelievably defiant, challenging, strategic. Give him an inch, he takes a mile. I mean, it's mm-hmm. like mastermindful. It's crazy.
Well, and I feel like when I do give them an inch, it gets a million times worse.
100.
So I just try to like lock down the boundaries and tighten them. And when I feel them really pushing, I push the boundary even farther. And I almost pick a fight, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like I can see that they're teetering on their emotions, that it's there, it's ready to come out, but it hasn't come out yet. Uh-huh. And I will choose something to say no on just out of the blue. Like, well, let's read this book tonight. Well, we're not going to read that book tonight.
Just so they know?
No, just so that we can get the feelings out. Because I feel like once he cries and has the feelings,
sure.
we can move past them.
Right.
But until that moment of him having the outburst,
yep,
they're just sitting at the surface bubbling and it disturbs everything we have for the day.
I know. It's so true. What
I know.
That?
And you know, the feeling has nothing to do with that.
Oh my God.
It's
never.
So many other things.
I'm like, you're.
Oh. So it's just like, I just pick an arbitrary thing to pick the fight about.
Wow. It's smart.
Just to get it out.
Yeah. That's really good. How are they at getting along?
They love each other.
And do they ever physically fight? I'm just asking because I'm like, is that what's coming? What am I going to do?
My kids don't physically fight.
Is she trying to take toys from him? Him take toys from her? What does that look like?
I think the pandemic had something to do with it, but my kids are insanely close. They spend every night that they can in a bed together. They have slumber parties on the weekends because that's what they want to do. I told them no school nights. I'm like, you can't do it on a school night.
Do they share a bedroom or no?
No, we thought about moving Clover in because they wanted to, but I just want to be able to put them in separate beds if I need to. It's all about that boundary, right? Like if they shared a bedroom, then I couldn't say like, if they're testing bed, okay, well, tonight's going to be a night you can't sleep together if you can't follow the rules and listen to mom or progress forward in bedtime, but they want to be together.
That is so cute that they are
really
so
cute.
Close. You know what a blessing that is? I mean, it's just so wonderful that they have each other, you know, like through everything that will come their way. It's just like, and that they're close and that they get along. You know, I'm really, really close with my brother and I'm so fucking grateful.
I love that. I hope it sticks. And like I said, I think COVID, them just look, if you're going to play with somebody, your sister's the person you're going to play with. So figure it out, you know?
Wow. And also that they were in like the same pod at school.
They were in the same pod at school. They were together all the time.
Wow.
Wow. They didn't have time apart.
Wow. Wow. Parenting styles. Who is the disciplinarian? Because I think it's you. Is it you?
Yeah, it's for sure. Scott can discipline as well, but I'm with them, you know, more of the time. I am with them. So I probably over-explain everything to the point of them just not even knowing what I'm talking about.
No, you are very verbal. You don't talk to them like they're babies. You respect them as individuals. Do you and Scott ever have major... Are you guys always united? I mean, we always try to be united front in front of our kids, no matter what. But do you guys have major, any like differing parenting styles that someone's had to budge on or move or learn, change?
I mean, for sure. There's been quite a few. I think that both of us have had to decide how we were going to move forward together with, right? And especially because when you become a parent, you don't know how to parent. You don't know what your parenting style is going to be. You couldn't even define that.
Right.
So especially me, I like knowledge. I like information. So I read books, I research everything. And then I send it to Scott. And I'm like, hey, read this. And then let's get on the same page, you know, because he doesn't have all that time. Take it more as my job to try and figure out the right moves.
Can you think of any like one or two favorite books or resources that have been instrumental to you in parenting?
Yeah, but they're not even parenting books. Does that matter?
What are they? It does not matter.
One of my favorites is a book called Never in Anger. And it's...
What's that?
Yeah, it's so obscure. It's so obscure. And you can blame Mary O'Malley for me even finding this book because she sent me this blurb from an article about like talking to your children calmly and the effect that it has on them versus raising your voice and being upset. And they were referencing back to like how Inuit family used to do it. And so, of course, I'm reading this article and I'm like, well, where is this information from? Because that's just who I am. So I'm like, bibliography. And I go and I find this book and it's, I don't know, it's probably like 600 pages or something. And it's just the portrait of an Eskimo family from like the 60s and 70s. And an anthropologist went and lived with them and she observed them and she observed how they raised their children. Uh-huh. And she wrote it all down. She had like a typewriter that she'd keep in the igloo. Like she like lived with
them. My God.
And it not only is it a fascinating book because she's living with an Eskimo family. Yeah. In the 60s, right? Before the internet, before the share of information happened. And she dispensed this knowledge of how they raised their children. And they believe that a child does not have reason. You're born without reason. And so you should be treated as such. If you are acting out, it's not because you're being mean. It's because you have no reason. But as an adult, we have reason. We should be able to control our emotions because we are the older one. We have the experience to do so. And it really struck me, right? It's like, yeah, you're right. And it could have been anybody telling me that, right? It didn't have to be this book.
No, I think you don't get rational thought till they're like 7.
Yeah, they don't know what they're doing.
No, you're negotiating with a terrorist. So to like, and also to put on them, like when I would say like, oh, he's manipulating the situation. It's like, he doesn't know. Mm-mm. He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
No.
Like he has no idea. And is there anything else that is like a go-to guide for you? Like, were you like a big Magda Gerber reader?
Janet Lansbury was always
Janet. Good old Janet. Amazing. She's amazing. She's an amazing podcast called Unruffled.
Yes.
She's fucking brilliant. Yes. There's a Janet Lansbury book that I swear by called No Bad Kids.
It's funny. I had a friend who had just become a mom and she told me that she was at her friend's house and Janet Lansbury lived next door. And it was like celebrity sighting. Right? Because it was Janet Lansbury. And she was so excited to tell me because I was the other mom. And I was like, oh, you saw Janet Lansbury? It was like,
it
was so
gosh.
Funny.
She's the best.
I'm like,
the best. Okay. As we're wrapping up, what the heck is your parenting advice? And teach me how to be as good at it as you are. I think I have to have more play dates with you, honestly. Girl, yes. I think if I had more play dates, you would just rub off on me.
Well, we will have you over whenever you want.
Please. Okay.
Okay. So my number one thing, my motto in life, which reflects down in my parenting, is everyone is different. I want to put it on a t-shirt. I want to write it on my kids' walls. Everyone is different. And it literally works for any situation.
Everything.
Yes. So my son comes home. You know, why does my friend get to go to Disneyland all the time? Well, every family is different and every family values going to Disneyland different. So while, you know, they go often because it's something that's important to them, we treat it like a celebration. So we go less. Everyone is different.
Works for everything.
Works for everything, especially as they get older. Like it really does. So everyone is different is my number one saying in life and in my family.
I love it. I'm stealing that shit.
It's good.
Everyone is different.
Everyone is different. I mean, it works for it's everything. Good. And, you know, McCoy came home the other day and he wears his hair in a ponytail, long and shaved underneath. And he wears it in a ponytail. And he said, Mom, my friend said, I have girl's hair, which I'm like, really? Like, aren't we in 2021 and we live in LA? Yeah, like, what
guys.
Is happening?
Come on, guys. Yeah.
And I said, well, what did you say? And he said, I just told him that everyone is different and that everyone wears their hair differently. And I said, yeah, buddy. That's right.
Yeah, buddy.
That's right. And then I said, also, it's only an insult. If you think being a girl is an insult, do you think being a girl is an insult? And he's like, no, Mom, you're cool. Glover's cool. Yeah, so we're all good.
Great answer.
And then I have three things that I want my children to be always. Kind, adaptable, and tolerant. I don't care what else they learn in the world. They will, academics and all that stuff, they'll figure it out. But I want them to be kind, adaptable, tolerant.
Oh, my biggie. You guys listening, do you see why Kelsey Porter is a fucking incredible mom? You're also just so grounded and strong. I'm just like so wishy-washy. I'm like, what's happening? And it's just, it's great. We got to hang out more. You got to rub off on me.
I got to ground you.
This is amazing. Tell me, I think we touched on it a little bit, but again, just to say it. You guys, HD Freeze is a yearly gala. There's awesome stuff that's auctioned off every year, like awesome holiday, like Hollywood celebrity shit, sports stuff, memorabilia, sign stuff, and all of the proceeds go to.
It all goes to HDSA. And to date, we've raised over $1.3 million in just past 7 years. So it's a huge event and it's actually changing people's lives because all of that money goes back to making centers and making sure that people and families have the support that they need to battle this awful disease. Because it's not just the person that has HD, right? It's the whole family. You all become caretakers. Everybody has a chance of having it and it just spreads like wildfire.
Right. No, it affects a lot of people. Do you know what the number, how many people in America have?
So 41,000 people in America are symptomatic with it. And then another like 400,000 are at risk of having it.
Wow.
Most people don't get tested. So most people in my situation, they choose not to know. It's hard.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it grounds me. I think that's what it does for me. It's heavy. And I am constantly reminded that the mother that my kids see right now is not the mother they will see later in life. And so I want to be a good mom to them now. And I think that's why I put so much effort into it.
You're fucking believable.
What made me feel so uncomfortable?
No, I know so many moms. And let me tell you, you are fucking tops. Like you are doing an incredible job and your children are incredible.
Thank you, Katie.
And they're so lucky to have you. Let's all work on getting some of these trials started, new ones, different ones, figure this shit out.
Yeah.
HDSA.org, Freeze HD. We're going to be linking to a bunch of stuff at the time when this podcast comes out. And I will also always be blasting and posting when the gala happens every year. But come on, guys, let's get this going. Kelsey Porter, thank you so much for being on Katie's Crib. You're fucking awesome. You have to come back on.
Thank you for having me and making me feel like what I have to say is valuable, because I don't look at me like that.
What you have to say is so valuable. I'm
thank
serious.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode. I want to hear from you. Let's chat. Questions, comments, concerns? Let me know. You can always find me at katiescrib@shondaland.com. Katie's Crib is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.